For a stock dog, what is real work on a farm or ranch? And how is it different than a competitive trial? Is real work necessary for developing a well-rounded stock dog? What does well-rounded even mean? And for that matter, is it really all that important? Rancher, trainer, and trialer Haley Honeywell is here to tell us. Welcome to Farm Dog. This is Farm Dog, the podcast about the working dogs of farming, ranching, homesteading, and rural living. Farm Dog is presented by Goats on the Go, a national network of independent business owners who provide sustainable weed and brush control for their customers using goats. Want to put goats to work on your vegetation problem? Interested in launching your own goat grazing business? The place to start is goatsonthego.com. Welcome to Farm Dog. I'm your host, Aaron Steele. I am glad you've joined us today, and I am glad that also Haley Honeywell of Triangle H Ranch in Wellington, Nevada is joining us. Good afternoon, Haley. How are you?
Hello, Aaron. Thank you for having me.
It is my pleasure. This is a great time for me to point out that this is another fantastic guest recommended by a listener of Farm Dog. So just a reminder that we do read all of your emails. We don't always get a chance to respond to them all, but we love those recommendations, so keep them coming. You can find a form to send us information at farmdogpodcast.com. So Haley, back to you. Will you do me a favor and just describe your history for us a little bit? How'd you get into ranching? How did you get into dogs? What's it like where you live? What kind of livestock do you work with? All that sort of stuff.
Well, I was raised around livestock. I was born in Oregon, and then we moved down to Nevada, and my stepdad ran a pretty large ranch with sheep and cattle. He had about 1,000 head of sheep, and I'm not really sure the number of cattle. I was pretty young then, but a few hundred. And he used to trial back in the 70s and 80s. He has since passed away, but he would have been considered one of the old timers and knew all the old time trialers in this country. And so I just grew up around livestock and watching dogs work and the usefulness of them. I've seen dogs do things that would be extremely difficult for people to do. Even moving cattle, you know, a good dog can take the place of a few people on horseback, and they can get into country that is pretty hard to get into on foot or horseback. So I, you know, like I said, I grew up around that. And then I always took an interest in trialing. And so did my mom. She was always really interested in the dogs way back also. And so I started trialing in the late 90s. I was a teenager then. And my first few trials were not very successful. They were kind of disasters, but that didn't dampen my desire to do it. And I kept working and trying to get better. And my stepdad, he was really good with the dogs, but I wouldn't say he was like the best teacher. He could show you, but he couldn't really explain it. And he didn't have like a ton of patience. Mm-hmm. So I would, he would just take my dog and work it, which really annoyed me when I was little. And so I'd sneak over to the arena by myself before anybody woke up and work my dog, trying to work things out.
Sure. Okay.
So I've always been pretty much obsessed with dogs and sheep and livestock my whole life. So that's kind of an overview. I started trialing a lot in the early 2000s. I had a really, really good bitch that actually won the U.S. National Nursery Finals with when I was 17. That was back in 2001. And I didn't realize how good that bitch was until partway through her career. But that really opened me up into the trialing world. And I won the regional finals, and I've won the National Cattle Dog Finals back in 2003 with a different dog. And then I've represented the U.S. in the World Trial two different occasions in Ireland and Wales. Those were also with different dogs. So I've been competing a lot. Won the nursery finals a second time, been reserve once, placed pretty high on several. So that's kind of an overview of my trialing career.
That's excellent. Thank you for that. I'm wondering, as somebody who was just kind of born into ranching and born into dogs, and then eventually got introduced to trials as a teenager, did you view the stuff you did on the farm with the dogs as work and the trials as fun? Did they bleed over into each other so that one was kind of indistinct from the other? Were you like any other teenager that had your chores to do and you hated it, but on the weekends you got to go do your thing in the competition?
Well, pretty much like the chores were chores and they had to be done, and I didn't mind them. You know, anything that involved working my dogs, I didn't mind doing, and lots of sheep work, I was always working my dogs, but I didn't really think about it a whole lot. And the trialing was kind of more icing on the cake, you might say. But what I realized further into my trialing career is that starting with all that real work on the ranch and really understanding sheep and raising sheep gave me a big advantage trialing, because I can understand and read sheep well. And I didn't realize that at the time. You know, when I was young, it's just like, oh yeah, these are the sheep, the chores, and this is what we do every day on the ranch. And you know, you're just doing what you need to. But years later, I realized what an advantage that was, but I didn't realize it at the time.
Do me a favor and describe for me what that quote real work was. Like, what sorts of things did you learn to appreciate in the trial world that had value for that you didn't even realize at the time? You just thought you were doing the work. Well, what was that work that turned out to be extremely valuable?
Probably the biggest thing that really makes you learn to work sheep properly is during lambing. Because up where I used to live, up in Alturas, California, it's not it the winters are pretty tough, and late winter seemed to last a long time. And so we would lamb through a barn, and if it was real bad weather, we'd lock the ewes in that were close, but the rest of the time they'd be out. And when they would lamb, we'd have to get those lambs and that ewe into the barn. And you have to do that right, or it's a disaster. You can't catch the sheep, and the ewe gets all upset, and then she might not take her lambs, and it's a cascade of issues that can come from that if you don't handle your sheep properly and keep them calm and happy. And you need a good dog. You need to know how to use your dog and where to put them, and you need a good handle on your dog. And you know, all my trial dogs were also my work dogs, and it actually gave the dogs an advantage too. You know, if they've moved ewes and lambs, then a disagreeable sheep on the trial course isn't going to throw them off very much, because they've encountered that kind of thing before. And the other things we would do on the ranch would be gathering the sheep in big fields. We had bigger fields up there, didn't utilize electric fence back then, and so it'd be kind of keeping an eye on the sheep throughout the day and doing some big gathers to gather up at night, and making sure you got everything. Occasionally, you know, you'd have to do a turn back when some would pop out of some brush you didn't see or whatever. So that kind of practical work for your dogs is very, very valuable.
I asked a trialer this, well, a similar question not too long ago on the podcast, but have you ever run across, I'm not going to ask you to name names or anything like that, but have you ever run across trial winners that would make a mess of the work that you know you have to do on your farm? Have you ever seen a trial winner that you're like, that's nice, but I don't want you working lambs and ewes at my place?
Yes, that happens now and then. And you know, I've actually seen it firsthand a fair amount, because there's a lot of trials where they rotate handlers to set out up top. So I don't know if you're familiar with sheepdog trials, but for listeners that aren't familiar with it, a course is on a pretty big field, and your general open outrun is going to be about 400 yards away. And you have three sets of freestanding gates that you have to bring the sheep through. And to start your run, somebody at the top of the field has to bring out five sheep and put them on a designated spot so that everybody's sheep start at that same place. And particularly with Rambouillet or Merino, some type of fine wool range ewes, they can be very, very difficult to handle because they're not used to being handled by people, especially in small groups. And so, if you watch people trying to set those sheep out, you can very quickly see which ones have practical work experience and which ones don't.
Sure. That's very interesting. And I bet someone with your experience can pick that out pretty quickly. Do you ever get frustrated with the folks and the dogs setting those sheep out? Like, man, this is taking a long time, or this could be going a lot more smoothly if we had a different dog up there.
Yes, everybody gets a little frustrated when you see your sheep up top not being handled well because it sets you up to have a difficult run.
Ah, sure. Yeah,
So
I
like
can imagine.
if your sheep break back or get away from the setup person, or if they're handled kind of harshly, right off the bat you have disagreeable sheep. And so that can really put things off, or like, I mean, I've had it happen several times, and almost every handler has. You're standing at your post and you're just seeing your sheep being run around and around and around and around up top, and you're just standing there going, oh, please just get the
So someone with very little experience might meet like me might expect that that would actually take some energy out of the sheep. It might like break them in for your dog, but it actually has the opposite ex effect. It just gets them cranked up.
Usually it gets them cranked up, and some sheep, if you run them around a lot like that, they are winded, and you're going to get one that's just going to lay down on your run, even if you're handling them nicely. Like especially ewes that have a little bit of age on them, or you know, potentially they're wormy or something like that. If they come out on top real nicely and they're just set quietly, and then you just walk them around the course and kind of baby them, you can kind of do okay. But if they've been run around on top and they're like breathing hard and kind of panting, it doesn't matter what you do, they don't want to play. And if they're out of air, they're gonna like veer off and lay down behind one of the panels. And
Right, okay.
then you're kind of like done.
Well, and I suppose that's one of those lessons that translates back to the farm or ranch too, that you have to do it efficiently, because at some point the sheep will quit, or the sheep will
Yep, they
become more
absolutely
obstinate.
will.
Yeah.
Yeah, they totally will. And that's kind of one of my pet peeves with trialing, is that you see a lot of poor sheep handling. You know, they work too hard, they run too much, they're and some of the people that don't have like real work experience, like they literally don't see that they're doing something to affect the sheep in a negative manner. Like they don't even understand it. They've never raised sheep. They've never depended on them for their livelihood. They've only practiced them with their dogs, and usually they're so busy watching their dogs, they're not even looking at the welfare of the sheep.
So I want to bracket that phrase that you just said, depended on them for their livelihood. I watched another interview of yours with somebody else, and you were talking about that same topic, about in the context of a trial, that people cannot have very much experience with stock. And that kind of confounded me for a second. I'm like, how can you be going from trial to trial and not have experience with stock? Because you have experience with stock every time you run a trial, every time you go out and practice, every time you train, you have experience with stock, but it doesn't fall into that category of depending on it for your livelihood. Is that one of the distinguishing things that separates somebody who has trial experience with stock versus somebody who has work experience with stock?
I think so, because like somebody that's strictly a trialer, like it's kind of their hobby. A lot of trial people, they don't have many sheep of their own, and some of them don't even own sheep. They strictly go to other people's places and either rent sheep or borrow sheep or work friends' sheep or whatever. And they just don't take into account the health and well-being of the sheep. Like they don't understand the consequences of working them too hard, where they're, breathing hard and they're stressed, that 5 days later they might come down with pneumonia. Or if you're working a pregnant ewe too hard, she might abort her lamb, or all kinds of things that can really affect the health of your herd, which eventually boils down to dollars in the bank. And if you're not raising livestock like that, and you're not thinking about it in that manner, I think it just doesn't even occur to them, a lot of them.
Sure. And it's that ability to be observant, the necessity of being observant, that actually turns you into a better stockman, better understanding the sheep, better understanding how they move, which then just folds right back into again your work with the dog. Am I heading down the right path?
Yes, that's totally true. Like when you have real sheep experience, you can tell, like say if you're in a trial and you're at the pen, you really have to read your sheep. Like, can I pressure the sheep right now? Am I going to lose them if I pressure them? Do I need to back off? Like I can look at a sheep and basically understand what it's thinking or feeling, and then I react accordingly. And if you don't have a lot of experience with sheep, you can look at them and not see any of that kind of stuff. And a lot of the people I give lessons to, it probably annoys them, but sometimes, especially in the beginning, I'll tell them to go put their dog away and I make them work the sheep by themselves so that they're really learning about reading your sheep. Because if you can't read your sheep, it's a real big disadvantage. And as far as like real work, on a trial, you might misread your sheep and your run might be over, or you're not going to place well or whatever. If you make a big error in real work, you could be making yourself another half day of work. You could be making potential injuries to stock or your dog. I mean, there's a lot of repercussions for misjudgment and mishandling in real work.
So I have not said this on an episode in a long time, but I started this podcast because I had been raising goats and sheep for a while, and the numbers were getting big enough that I decided it was time for a dog. And I knew I'd be calling lots of people, emailing lots of people, asking for advice. And I just thought, if I'm going to be doing that, why don't I just record those conversations, right, and share them with other people? And so just that was just a little bit of context, but so I've spent years and years and years working with our sheep and goats without a dog, and I didn't realize that I had gotten a lot better over the years at understanding the stock, because it's not something that you like that registers in your brain. Oh yeah, look how much better I'm getting at this. It's something that is so subtle, you honestly don't realize it until you try to teach it to somebody else or explain it to somebody else. You don't realize how instinctual it has become. Have you found that you can train and teach people to do that? Because I've tried to tell, other people have come to help me before, help in quotes, help me before. And I'm just like, why don't you understand that if you step that direction, a half step, that it will solve the problem, and it's just seems impossible to teach. So how do you do it?
Well, it's very difficult, and it's been It's definitely been a learning curve for me to try to clearly communicate, if you do A, B happens kind of a thing, and try to make it in such a way that people understand. And probably the best thing I have found is asking the person a whole bunch of questions. Like, I'll give them a task and then, they either do it or don't do it well. And then I ask them questions. Why did that work? Why did that not work? Tell me what you saw. What were your sheep telling you? And that really engages them to pay close, like focus on more minute details and be thinking about it. Because, as you know, with handling livestock, a big portion of it is problem solving in the moment. There's not one answer for everything. A lot of it is kind of generalized, and then when you're in the moment, you have to be acting and reacting the right way to make things work well.
I am dumb enough and naive enough and went into this podcast starting Farm Dog with so little knowledge that I think sometimes I don't realize the echelon of people I'm speaking to. And I think that's the case here. I find that I've talked to a couple of like stock dogs sort of celebrities, and I didn't even realize it because I'm not in that world. But you kind of laid out some of your resume as a trialer, and that's pretty stout stuff. I'd like to dive into that a little bit more and just know that it's coming from a guy who's completely naive to the trial world. So when you talk about a sheepdog trial, what organization are you competing in? Is that the US Border Collie Handlers Association, or is it a different one?
Yes, that's the one. That's the primary sanctioning organization for sheepdog trials, particularly the field trials, which is what, that's my specialty in the type of trials that I prefer the most, or the
Okay. You cut off just a little bit there, Haley, at the end. You said those are the trials you prefer.
Oh, yes. Yes, I prefer the big field trials as opposed to arena trials. Arena trials are fun, but being able to work my dog at big distances and out in a nice, pretty green field, I enjoy that the most.
Yeah, I can get that. So who sanctions the arena trials typically? Is there one main association for that?
I could be wrong. I believe that Mountain States Stock Dog Association sanctions sheep trials as well, and they might do field trials. I don't really know. I have not personally run in them. I have watched the MSSA national finals on the live stream, which I'm a huge fan of live streams, any of those that do live streams, but they do offer sheep finals, but it's more in an arena.
Okay. And then I suppose that there are county and state fair trials and trials put on by local and regional clubs that aren't necessarily affiliated with any large national association, too. Okay. All right. So you also mentioned that you have had success in the cattle dog circuit. So what organization is that?
Back when I did that was also USBCHA. And
Oh, it
back
was.
then, there were not very many other trial associations, maybe just one or two. Now there's quite a few different cattle dog associations, and I know MSSA does sheep, and I honestly don't know about the other ones. But back when I did the cattle dog finals, they had just added cattle trials to the what they offered, and the national finals were going to be out west. So I jumped on that because it was going to be close-ish, and and I got worked hard that year to get qualified. And those were some of the first cattle trials that I'd ever competed in that were in the field. other ones that I'd run in were all in an arena on horseback, which I had never ridden much at all when I was younger, so I didn't know where to be on the horse, and it was sort of like a duck out of the water on those. But when I could run cattle standing at a post and, kind of like a sheepdog trial, then I felt pretty comfortable with that. So that's why I worked hard that particular year to run. And actually, that's been the only time the USBCHA cattle dog finals were out west.
Okay. All right. And so have you continued to do some cattle dog trials, or was that kind of a somewhat of a one-off for you?
I do them when they're convenient.
Okay.
So
Okay.
if there's some that are close to me, I enjoy competing in them because all my dogs run, I mean they work everything because my husband's family business, which we're a part of, they run over 1,000 head of mother cows. And so I use all my dogs for cattle work too, particularly like during gathering off of permits and all that stuff. So if the cattle dog trial is close and easy to get to, it doesn't conflict with other things, I'll run in it. Whereas a sheep dog trial, I'll drive halfway across the country to get to.
I see. Okay. Well, that's the perfect setup because just the nature of the trials and the trial associations themselves, and that they are, split up according to sheep and cattle, seems to at some point have created a separation in the types of dogs that are being bred and raised and trained and promoted for specific purposes. You see this kind of split between cattle dogs and sheep dogs. And you mentioned that I've got my dogs have to do both. So is that an unusual thing in your world that to expect that from dogs, that they can work both cattle and sheep, or are there still a lot of versatile dogs out there who can switch from one to the next?
I'd say it's a little bit unusual, but not a great deal. There's a lot of people that do both. But I would say as a general rule, the dogs are more focused on one or the other. When I married my husband, I wanted, like my dogs back then, I hadn't used a whole lot on cattle and they were older. And so that's a, health risk to put them on cattle later in life because they don't realize they can get hurt by them. So I was looking into some different lines of border collies and more of the cattle bred ones, and I actually even tried some Kelpies and after trying several of those dogs and lots of different cattle dog breeding, it wasn't just, one or two different ones, is that they'd be okay on cattle, but they didn't have a lot of the talents that I needed for the sheep work and the sheepdog trialing. One in particular was a really good natural outrun where they have that real instinctual quality to cast out and gather things. I really found that lacking in a lot of the different cattle dog lines. And for me, like to sheepdog trial, you really need that good outrun because if you're having to redirect and use whistles and guide them out to your sheep, you can lose anywhere from like 5 to 19 points. And so when you take a hit like that, there's no way you're going to be in the prize money. So I kind of changed gears and I decided that I was going to focus more on sheepdog lines, but try to focus on the strongest lines and more of the some of the UK dogs that are shepherd's dogs, like actual using dogs, not just trial dogs. And honestly, the way social media has blossomed in the last 10 years has been a huge advantage on buying dogs from the UK because now you can see videos of practically anything you want with the swish of your finger on your phone. So you can really pick out different types of dogs that are from those using situations that are strong. And what I've found is that most of those dogs can handle the kind of cattle work that I do with no problem. Plus, they're really good for the sheep, the sheep work and the trialing. So that's the direction I've really gone for my own dogs. And I mean, yes, those dogs are a little bit too much dog for certain trialing scenarios, but for me, they're a really, really good dual purpose kind of dog. Because, if I have 12 dogs of my own, I don't want to have 16 where, four of them are, designated cattle dogs. I want them to be able to do everything. It just works better for me.
Okay, so I don't know if our audience is feeling it, but I'm feeling it. There is so much there in the last minute of you talking that I want to dig in a little bit further. This could be just because of where I'm coming from right now. The situation I'm in right now, I'm very curious about this, which might be a hint to our audience that something new has happened in my life, but we'll get to that in another episode. So I think let me recap what I heard from you, that it's easier at the trial level to get a sheep bred dog that can be strong enough and powerful enough for the cattle work you do and still retain the traits that you need to win in a big sheepdog trial than it is to go the reverse, to take a more a cattle bred dog and have it bring with it from that world the traits that you need on a big gather, for example, to win a trial. Is it the same case at just the work level? Let's say I had no interest in trialing at all. Am I still going to feel like I don't have a great sheepdog if I start with one of those cow dog lines? And or for the type of work that you do on a farm and ranch when it's non-competitive, they're still going to be able to gather and have some of the traits that you need for sheep work on the ranch.
That's a good question. For me, even for real work with the sheep, I have found the sheepdog bred ones better for me. I will say I do like there are certain lines with the cattle dogs that if they're maybe a quarter of the cattle dog and then three quarters of the sheepdog breeding, sometimes that can be a nice mix, but most of my dogs, I mean, all my ones currently are all sheepdog bred and they can do both. And the big thing that I found, like in the winter, I turn my sheep loose on the hills, and it's real steep, rocky, brushy kind of country. And they need to be a pretty good outrunner to get up in that stuff and find their sheep and see the sheep and cast out and do that. The instinctual part of their work is important in those kind of scenarios. And a lot of it is when the dog is out of sight, where you can't be directing them and watching for them and making sure that they're not leaving any sheep. And that's the thing I really struggled with the pure cow dog bred ones, where they just didn't have the some sheepdog people call it scope, where they're really like they outrun, they have a nice natural cast, they see more, they kick out to go around those. They kind of have a more instinctual feel of not leaving any. When they're bringing them, they're feeling a little bit, not leaving any behind. They're kind of feeling their way through some tough terrain versus just slamming them down the mountain. Those are kind of some differences that I found. Now, if some of the cattle dogs, I just never could get a good outrun on them. Like I would always have to stop them and redirect them. And I had to mechanically train that outrun, which worked okay. I mean, under relatively average conditions, they could make a decent outrun and do an okay job, and I could see them. But when the terrain or the conditions got hard, they didn't have that natural instinct to fall back on. And when I'm not able to help them somewhat, they couldn't They can fall back on training to a degree, but it's not like falling back on instinct.
We will continue with this conversation with Haley in our next episode, which will only be 1 week from today. We're trying out something new to bring you more frequent episodes. So look for the follow-up on this conversation next week. In the meantime, we would invite you to visit farmdogpodcast.com. That's where you can leave us questions and comments and episode recommendations, topic recommendations, that sort of thing. You can also click the shop button there and show your support for the Farm Dog Podcast by buying some branded merchandise either from our sponsor, Goats on the Go, or branded specifically with Farm Dog. We've got hats, t-shirts, and other merchandise. We would love it if you would help us out in that way. Until next week, folks, thank you so much. Thank you for listening. It's been a pleasure. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Farm Dog. If you enjoyed this episode or any of the other episodes, please subscribe, leave us a positive review, and tell someone about it. Thanks.